Har sets off of the following. It says, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe b'Har Sinai." When we've spoken on Har Sinai, saying the following, "Davro b'nei tov amata lenchi sevot ula oris shaninos emachem v'shav sa'aret Shabbos l'Hashem." So there's this connection between Shemitah and Shabbos. It seems to be a very, very, a very big connection. But the land is going to rest as a Shabbos for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the question is, what is that connection? So, I don't think people really understand what Shemitah and Yovel are. I mean, the purpose of it, and also, like, forget about the concepts of keep every 7 years and then 49, but there's something a lot deeper going on here. I mean, it's clear that we read Bahar B'chul Kosai every year, sometime during Shemitah. Whether it's toward the beginning, toward the middle, toward the end, whatever it is, we always read it during the Sfira, I'm sorry, I said Shemitah, didn't I? During Sfira, every single year. So, you have to understand, there's got to be a connection here, because there's 7 weeks of 7 days each, 7 weeks of 7 days each, which lead up to 49 days, which lead to the 50th day of Shavuos, just like the 7 years lead up to Shemitah, and 7 times 7 is 49, you lead up to a Yovel. There's clearly a connection here between this. And then you start off at the very beginning of the parsha, and it says, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe b'Har Sinai l'Emor." And Rashi starts off, and he says, "Mayin in Shemitah etzol Har Sinai." What does Shemitah have to do with Har Sinai? You see, there's a connection. There's Har Sinai, and then there's Shemitah. So there's something between the 7 and 7, and the 49, and the 50 that's there. Shavuos is our freedom. Our freedom from the Torah and everything else like that. And Yovel is that Cheres where everybody goes free. Everybody, no matter what Abdus they're in, they go free. So what is that? So here's the concept. For those who have done Sefer Yetzirah, me not included, but everybody else here who has done Sefer Yetzirah, you'll know that there's a big connection between the following three things. Olam, Shana, and Nefesh. Some part of the year is connected to some person in the world who is connected to a certain place. There's a big connection between the three different things. And all three of them are there. So the famous one is, the famous example, space, time, and person. Yes. So what is that exactly? For those that do a tikkun, the tikkun on Shavuos night is supposed to mention it. Hey, it's all out there. But this is the famous example. The famous example is the holiest place in the world is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, inside the Beis HaMikdash, where the Aron Kodesh was. The only person who goes inside there is the Kohen Gadol, who is the holiest person in the world. And the only time that he goes inside there is Yom Kippur, which is the holiest day. So the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so it's like a triple Kiddusha, that type of an idea that goes all together, that's getting behind it. But you got to take a step down. Okay, so a step down from there is probably Har HaBayis, the Beis HaMikdash. The Har HaBayis connects with Kohanim, because the Kohanim definitely are a step down from the Kohen Gadol. So that'll be for them. I'm not so sure what exactly it would be in time, although it probably would be Yom Tif. That would probably be the next step down. Yom Tif from Yom Kippur. And then if you take two steps down, it'll be Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is the area. That's the third to holiest, we'll call it. The Levium will be the Shevet that represents Yerushalayim. That'll be the person that's involved over here. And the time will be Shabbos. The reason why Yom Kippur is Shabbos Shabbason, and Yom Tif is a Shabbason, and Shabbos is just plain Shabbos, is that each one will correspond to a different part of the world and a different person that's out there in this world. It's a very, very interesting concept to go into in the first place. Here's the idea. Shemitah can be connected to those two other places, to Yerushalayim and to the Levium. So here's the idea. Shemitah does for the years what Shabbos does for the week. What does Shabbos do for your week? It gives you the koach, the kedusha, to be able to last throughout the entire week. The kedusha that you gain on that one day of Shabbos lasts for the next 6 days, and it pulls out for the next 6 days so you can survive, and so you need another infusion of kedusha, which comes up on the very next Shabbos. So the very next Shabbos, you get that in, and everything's all okay again. But you need that Shabbos beforehand to be able to push it off for the rest of the week. It's the exact same thing regarding Shemitah and the 6 years of the work cycle. The only reason why you're able to get through those 6 years of the work cycle is the amount of kedusha that you're able to bring down for yourself from that Shemitah. Otherwise, you just get bored. I mean, think of a person who's working 7 days a week, every single day, is doing the exact same thing. The monotony is going to kill him. There's no way that you can do the exact same thing every single day forever, just for years. It's impossible. So what do? So you infuse it with something different. You infuse it with a spirituality that'll change it around from where it is and turn it into something different. So what is that? By Shabbos, you have the 6 days of the week leading into the Shabbos that leads you into the 6 days of the week. By Shemitah, you have that year in which you have all Kiddusha going for you, where all they did during Shemitah was sit there and believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and learn Torah, and they were able to use that for the next 6 years. So the next 6 years, they were actually able to work and not feel like they were missing something. Yerushalayim can't have any plants planted in Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to have a garden. You're not allowed to have other things planted in Yerushalayim. Some people hold to that really modish la'alacha. I mean, what they do is, there's no grass. It was the last time they saw grass there.
The connection between all them is that they're all gods. Shemitah God is saying, this is my land. Shabbat is saying, this is my world. Yerushalayim is saying, this is my universe. This is the center. So they're all claiming that they're Hashem. Shemitah says it by Shemitah that Hashem is saying, this is my land.
A very, very good call. That definitely is the connection. One of the connections here is this Netios. I mean, this connection over here is like, it's a pure one. Yerushalayim cannot have any plants inside it. You're not allowed to plant Yerushalayim. It was one of the Tanoim that Yeshua made. You can't plant anything in Yerushalayim. Shemitah is all about not planting. There's nothing about the planting there. It's not about making things grow during that time. It's about you and your personal growth as opposed to everything else that's going around you. That's one. Aside from what Yisrael just said before. Number two, Yerushalayim has no chalukah among the Shvatim. There's no Shevet who owns Yerushalayim. It's owned by everyone equally. Every single person has an equal share in Yerushalayim. Every person. It's not Binyamin, it's not Yehuda, it's not anybody else. It belongs to every single person. So too, Shemitah is all about Hefker. It's all about being Mafker everything, giving it out to anybody you want. Anybody who wants to come and take fruits or plants or anything that they can get from there, go and take it, because the whole year is Hefker. The whole idea is Hefker. And Shevet Levi is the perfect idea of Hefker. They don't have a chelik in the land. They don't go anywhere. They don't do anything. What do they have to do all day? They learn and they teach and they serve in the Beis Hamikdash. They serve Klal Yisrael. They're the idea of Hefker. So Hefker in Levium is the same idea of Shemitah within the land, which is the same idea of what you would call, I guess what you would call Yerushalayim among the different places. And that is a connection to Shabbos. And that connection to Shabbos is that Shabbos is not owned by anything or there for anyone. It's there for you to have that personal growth, for you to be able to do something with it, for you to be able to do something, for you to bring about that Kedusha and everything like that. It's the idea of Hefker. Shemitah is not about newness and something brand new comes about every 7 years. Shemitah is always here. The Kiddush is always available. It's in Shevet Levi. It's constantly found in Yerushalayim. Here, Rav Olson goes on a little tangent about how the old people, those who used to live in Yerushalayim, Mamish dedicated their lives for Torah. That none of them worked. And always, it was always known that in Yerushalayim, if you lived in Yerushalayim, you were going to be under tremendous hardship. You were not going to live very well. You weren't going to have that much food. But you knew you were going to sit and learn all day long. That's what they did. And that's why when they collected around the diaspora throughout Europe and throughout Turkey and all the Arab countries for Yerushalayim, they knew. They were paying for Talmidei Chachamim. They were paying for the Gedolim that were living in Yerushalayim, because it wasn't a place where you lived an easy life. It was never an easy life living in Yerushalayim. That's what it went out to. And the idea of what Shemitah can do is it spreads out that Kedusha to everywhere around Eretz Yisrael. In the 6 years, the Kedusha of Shemitah applies in Yerushalayim, that you don't plant Yerushalayim. After Shemitah, meaning for the next 6 years, On Shemitah, that Kiddusha spreads out to all of Eretz Yisrael. The Kiddusha of Yerushalayim is there, and it's there the entire time, and it spreads out to everywhere in Eretz Yisrael. It becomes a Kiddusha that goes absolutely everywhere. That's the idea of what you want to have. Can you imagine? There's an Indian of Me'ein Olam Haba, an Indian of having something that's similar to what Olam Haba is all about for an entire year, where we all become Levian. None of us work the land. None of us have anything else to do except do what? Just to sit and learn. Because there's no work that needs to be done. That's the idea of what Shemitah is supposed to represent and what it's supposed to do more than anything else. It's an idea of, again, being Shevet Levi. But Yovel, which leads into my favorite word in the English language by far, Jubilee. There's never been a better word than that. It's unbelievable, and the two E's, everything about it. It's a full step up. The Yovel is an unbelievable step up. Yovel has no shaykhs to this world. Although Shemitah is seven, And as the Maharal said, and I've been told that I've got to speak on more Maharals, but as the Maharal has said, that seven is something that has to do with this world. It's Kedusha, but Kedusha that is represented in this world. That seven is that idea of within this world, but still it's Kadosh, something holy. Eight is beyond the world. A Bris Milah is on the eighth day. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the Kohen Gadol, which at the time of the year is Yom Kippur, have no shaychus to any other time of the year, no shaykhus to anybody else. The Kohen Gadol is not shaykh to anyone else in the world. Nobody can be like the Kohen Gadol. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's Inu Min Amida. You go inside, you don't even know where the Aron HaKodesh is. You look on one side, there's 10 Amos. You look on the other side, there's 10 Amos. Then you look at the Aron, and you count it, and you're like, how could that be? You don't understand how it works. It's Inu Min Amida. There's no way to figure out exactly where it is or how it is. When it comes to that, Yom Kippur, it's not part of the year. The Satan doesn't work that day. That Satan's not in charge that day. HaSatan is the Gematria 364. It's a time of year where nothing's working. Yovel is that idea that's beyond. It's the eighth year after the 49 years, the 49-year cycle after 7 times 7. In the eighth cycle, there's an eighth year that is so beyond this world. It's absolute chayrus, absolute freedom. What were you going to say?
I heard the Maral, I saw this 2 days ago, explains that the number seven is the six directions, north, east, south, west, up and down, and the seven that encompasses all of it.
So that's what it means. Exactly. That's exactly how he explains it. And he says it. It's all over the Maharal. And he explains that that's what it means. That it's Kedusha that represents everything and takes in everything all as one. So what's Yovel? Yovel is Chayrus. It's freedom from the boundaries of this world. In this world, I cannot fly. I've tried many times and I've never been able to fly. Yovel is the idea of a person being able to fly. Going beyond boundaries of this world, doing whatever you want to do and doing it well. Succeeding in what you're trying to do. That's the idea of Yovel. That's the idea of what you're trying to do. When does Yovel start? Anybody know? When does Yovel start? On Yom Kippur. It's Machlokas. But Yom Kippur. Why does it start on Yom Kippur? Because that's the whole idea of Yovel. That's what Yom Kippur represents. That's what Yovel is supposed to represent. It's supposed to be something just for what people do and for what people are supposed to have. It's just, it's a level that's beyond anything else. And that connects us right back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's Yovel all about? Says the Pasuk in Perek Chof Hei, Pasuk Nun Hei, Yovel is Li B'nei Yisrael Avadim. Yovel is the first letters of Li B'nei Yisrael Avadim. It's all about being part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not just being for yourself and doing things for yourself and everything like that. That's Shemitah, working on yourself and bringing Kedusha and doing other things that the rest of the years flow better. And fine, Yovel is beyond it. It takes it beyond that part. That's why this Parsha is so connected to Har Sinai. The 50th day is Shavuos. Shavuos is beyond this world. It's the only day where we can stay up all night long and have the entire night and learn the entire night long. And according to Reb Nachman and everybody else, it's the idea of that Shikun Klali. On that night, a person can fix himself completely. It's the 50th day. It's beyond nature. It's the 8th of the 7 times 7. It's beyond everything like that. That's why this Parsha is connected to Har Sinai. That's Ma'in and Shemitah to Har Sinai. You're right. Shemitah doesn't really have a connection to Har Sinai. But the Shemitah's leading up to Yovel, that's Har Sinai. That's the idea of the entire world. That's the idea of everything that has to do with freedom. And that's pure freedom. Understanding that I don't have to be bound by everything that's there in this world, by the walls that are set out there for me in this world, that I can do something that's beyond this world, and that is sitting there and being able to learn that is so far out there that people just don't understand when they're there inside this world. That's the idea. After Shemitah, the Parsha goes into a series of unfortunate events, one after the other. It's really crazy. It goes and it starts by Revi. The Har is a very, very short Parsha. The Har is how many? 57 Pesukim? 57 Pesukim. It starts at Revi, and it goes through all these different things that happen to a person if a person becomes poor. And then it goes from one level to the other. The levels are, first you become poor and you sell your land that you inherited all the way back from your forefathers. Mamish, all the way back when he came into Eretz Yisrael for the very first time, you had a land. That land ends up getting sold. Then you sell your house in a walled city. Then you sell your house in the field. That's on Pesukim Chof Testa Lama Dalet. Then you better help the poor before they become so poor and they can't do anything before it gets too bad. That's Lamed Hei Tu Lamed Ches. Then you have to sell yourself as an Eved Ivri. That if you get so poor, you might have to sell yourself just to another Jew. Lamed Tes Tu Rem Zayin. Then you have to sell yourself to a Goy and possibly even a Avodah Zarah. Even Eker, the Pasuk says, even to sell yourself to a Avodah Zarah, you might have to go so far down, no one will buy you, not even a Jew will buy you. The only person that's going to buy you is a Avodah Zarah. A bias of a Avodah Zarah. That's in Pesukim Mem Zayin to Nun Hei. And that's pretty much the end of the Parsha. It's a terrible series of events. What does that have to do with Shemitah? We got into Shemitah, we got into Yovel, and you're in the highest of the high. You are sitting there, you're saying, wow, I am so far up there. This is the greatest level that a person can be. I'm beyond this world, I'm beyond nature. And all of a sudden, and you're going to become poor. And when you become poor, you're going to have to sell yourself. And then this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen, and then that, and then that. Finally, you're going to sell yourself to a avodah zarah. It gets that bad? Well, what does that have to do with Shemitah? Okay, there's an unbelievable little part over here that goes in. And Pasuk Chav Vav, it says the following, the Ish, Ki lo yeh lo goel, if he does not have a relative, the Yisiga Yado, and he gets rich, Umatza Kedei Gulaso, when he finds the money that he needs in order to redeem his land, then you count how many years have passed, and then you try to get your land, you get your land back and everything like that. But there's a process. If the guy has no relatives, and he becomes rich, okay, says Rav Shor, why do you have to say that he has no relatives? So just say, and he becomes rich. Once you say he becomes rich, that's good enough. Understood 100%, but it's obvious that he has no relatives. If he has relatives, then the relatives are going to help him. I mean, it's obvious, right? So obviously he has nobody to help him. There's nobody out there. So why does he have to spell it out in the pasuk that if you have no relatives and you get rich, then you're going to be able to afford it? Says Rav Shor, there's no reason to say that. I understand if you have relatives, you're going to get help. Especially the pasuk right before it says, "Ubal golo akarav elav," comes your relative who's close to you, but golos memkarachiv, he's going to redeem it for you. So now you're going to tell me, and if you don't, and you become rich, just say, and if you become rich, you can do it yourself. Here's his answer. Kadosh Baruch Hu does not give avdus to a person unless God already knows He's going to save you and bring you out from the low level that you've just gotten yourself into. He is not going to allow you to fall down that far unless there's already a path and a road to your freedom for you to be able to become free. Because Hashem wants everyone to succeed. This is the crazy line. Any time that you are tested, Hashem has already given you the koach you need to succeed, to win. And when you go up to Shemayim at the end, at the very, very end, then it's going to be, you're going to look at it and you're going to say to yourself, that was ridiculous. How did I not realize that the day before, this is what happened to me? The day before, something like that happened to me. How can I not have seen that? How could that not be? But that's what a Nisayon is. It matters how cynical you are. How cynical you're acting, and how cynical you're being at that time, and how much you're saying to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, I believe, versus, there's no way. There's absolutely no way. Because there's no way that you would be tested for something, even when it's really, really bad. Really bad. You couldn't think of anything worse. You don't have a job, you're being sued, you can't think of anything worse that could possibly happen to you. Like, it's just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Where the huge feelings, those feelings of hopelessness, are just like, what in the world could you possibly want me to do? What else could there be that you could possibly take from your life? At that point, that's where the Satan says, I'm done. That's when something gives up and goes away, and that's when a Kadosh Baruch Hu comes in. That's what Kadosh Baruch Hu says. You couldn't have gone any further. At the point where lo yiyeh lo goel, this is Rav Shor's line, where you don't have any more relatives left, you thought you'd be able to go to this guy, then that guy, then this friend, then that friend. All of a sudden you look around and you're just like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I've got nothing left. I can't go to anyone. I've burned all my bridges. I've knocked out every single one of my friends. I have literally nothing left. No money, no friends, no help, nothing. My parents have thrown me out of their house. There's nothing left that I could possibly do. Nobody's paying for my rehab. Nobody even wants to help me. Nobody even wants to talk to me. That's it. That time is when there's only one thing to do. You got to go to God. You don't have much of a choice. I shouldn't have gone into that, right? Fine, I'm sorry. I didn't have to go into that. But regardless, that's the guarantee. It's Dafka after a parsha of Shemitah, where it goes into Amuna, and we're saying, you believe. Just believe me. Trust me. Lay your land fallow. Don't work your land for a full year. I promise you, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's better for you. Believe in me. Trust me. After that, we can say to a person, by the way, you're going to go down. There are going to be times when you're feeling down. Whether the feelings that you have are legitimate or illegitimate. Well, other people look at you and say, like, come on, that's down? I'll tell you what's down. Whatever it is. Somebody is telling me they're in debt. And I told them, and this is true. I have a friend who called me up, and I said, I heard he's in debt. I'm wondering if I can help him or whatever it is. He's $600,000 in debt. $600,000. Forget about his house and his cars and everything else that's there. That's a lot of debt. So I went back to that person. I said, you think you're in debt? This is a debt. This is the real debt. I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to do. And even that guy, you think that's a debt? in comparison to some other people that are out there? Okay, I don't know what would be legitimate and what's not legitimate, what's this and that and the other. But the point is that you come down to the point where there's nothing else you can do but say to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, can I have some help here? Because I got no other friends. I've got no one else who can come anywhere near me. Can I please have a little bit of help? And when he doesn't help you immediately, you don't scream back at him and say, I thought I asked for help. You say, you need to wait a little bit. The Nisayan is there for you to succeed, for you to do well, and for you to get what you're supposed to get. You just got to put yourself out there. The Iker is to be makir, to recognize where you are, and that you brought yourself to that position, and it's no one else's fault. Don't blame that guy, or that girl, or your parents, or that rabbi, or anything else that's around there. It's you, although they may have helped. They may have done something to help along the way. But it's you. If you realize it was you, then your Yeshua is ready to come. And that's when the Siga Yado. That's when your hand starts getting that money that you've been looking for so long. Because every Jew is beyond nature. We're all beyond anything that's there in this world. We're living in a land of eights. Because we all have a bris milah. We all have Rifa'inu as number eight in our Shemot Esrei, the eighth bracha on our Shemot Esrei. It's all beyond any teva that's going to be here. That's the idea of what it means by B'Sigi Yado. Then you take a look at Pasuk Mem Zayin. Pasuk Mem Zayin says, "B'chisasi yad ger v'soshav imach." If you get so down low, "Umach achicha imo," and as we said before, your brother is poor with you. There's no one who can buy you, and you can't even sell yourself to another Jew. Every Jew is downtrodden. Every Jew is knocked down. There's nothing else you can do. "V'nimka leger tosha." So you got to sell yourself to a guy. And then it gets even worse. "Ola eker mishpachas ger," or to Eker, which Rashi says is a Vodazara of the family of a ger. So here's the problem. Number one, what does Eker mean, and why in the world is Eker the name for a Vodazara? Number two, so low. What does that mean that you're going down that low? What is the Pasuk trying to tell you? How can that be? How can you even think of selling yourself to a Vodazara? To an Vodazara? That's what you brought yourself to? You're going to do that? You obviously can't serve it. So what are you supposed to do? You have to kill yourself before serving a Bodhisattva. You're going to sell yourself to a Bodhisattva? How could you have gone so far low? Tosfos, a Bodhisattva, Dafkof, says, you know why it's called Eker? Because a Bodhisattva will be Okar from the world. Because a Bodhisattva is going to be uprooted from the world and it will all be destroyed. Shkayach. Why here? Why here over any other place where it mentions a Bodhisattva throughout the Torah? The 40 Lavin that we have, don't do a Bodhisattva, don't do a Bodhisattva. Here it has stated Eker, but now the answer is so poshut. What's the answer? The answer is because Dafka here. It's only here where we can say that Eker is the Bodhisattva. Because this is the lowest of all the levels that a person can come to. You can't get any worse than this. You can't hit more rock bottom than selling yourself to a Bodhisattva to clean out the toilets of a place of idol worship. You can't get much worse than that. There's nothing else you can do, especially with Baal Peor. You can't get much worse than that. Dafka now, when there's absolutely no hope, can we say it's Akar? It's already uprooted. It's already gone. Don't worry about it. There's nothing to worry about. The Avodah Zarah will be gone and you're going to be a free man. You'll be a free man. It's Dafka then where it says, Acharei Nimkar, after you're sold, Geulat Yelo. You're going to have that redemption. Listen, I don't like using these types of stories as like, you know, as rayas. I've never been a big Holocaust story guy. I've always understood the Holocaust as being literally something that's beyond my comprehension and something that I can, you know, every story that I hear, I just sit there and I'm like, I have nothing to do with those types of people. I had no idea what would happen to me if I was in their position. But this was a really crazy story. A really crazy story. There was a person, his name was Reb David Leib Schwartz, brought down by Alein LeShabbat by Reb Yitzchak Zilberstein. Reb David Leib Schwartz, he was in the Holocaust. And he was makbid. He was one thing that he was always makbid on. He knew he wouldn't be able to keep Shabbos. He knew there was no way he was going to be able to keep kashrus. He knew that all these different things that there was during the Holocaust, there was nothing. I mean, what could he do? There were things that they were making him do that there was no way that he was going to be able to hold himself back from. So he had one thing that he said, I am going to be makbid on. He was going to have a suda on Shabbos of one kezias of bread. One kezias of bread. Can you imagine that? One kezias of bread. He promised himself that every Shabbos he would somehow have that olive size worth of bread. and that would be his meal for Shabbos. Sometime, night, day, whenever he could get it. It was extremely hard, but in the first camp that he was in, he did everything he could. He made friends with all the guards. He made sure to get a hold of the right people. And he made sure that even if they skipped out on food, or if they were only serving soup that day, or whatever it was, somehow he would make sure that he got that kezias of bread, or he would trade something for it. He did whatever he could to do it. He was matzliach for a very, very long time, for almost a year. But then he was transferred. The new camp that he was being sent to, he ended up getting transferred on a Wednesday, got there on a Thursday. And it was a big problem. He didn't know anyone in the camp. He didn't know any of the guards. So he told the people there, he asked them, what do you guys eat during the week? They said they serve us maybe like a crust, a little crust of bread. And they serve us mostly soup. He said, how big is the crust? They told him, it's nothing. He said, I need a kezias. I need to be able to eat. I need to make sure that I have something for Shabbos. They said, it's going to be impossible. It's going to be absolutely impossible. So he did everything he could, talk to this person, talk to that person. And everybody said, there's no way. Absolutely no way. So he said, listen, I can't do anything. Nothing I can do. And he said, the only person I can talk to is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the people at the camp laughed at him. Laughed at him. I can never judge this. This is another reason why I don't like reading Holocaust stories, because it was always the people that Mamish had no belief. But they said, they looked at the guy and they said, you think you're going to get a little thing of bread? God has forsaken us, my friend. There's no God with us right now. There's no way you're going to get anything. Absolutely no way. And it's already Friday. There's no way. Friday, 3 hours before Shabbos, they come up to everybody in the camp and they give every single person a full roll. A full roll. And they didn't explain why. Every person got a roll. So every person took the roll. And each person was ready to eat it. But they said, wait a second. There's a trick. What's going on here? So they went around. They asked the guards. Finally, one guard told them. It's because right after Shabbos, you guys are going on a 3-day trip. We're not going to be able to get you food then. We don't want you to die on the roads. It's going to be too much for us to clean up. So instead, we decided to give you this roll. And this roll should last for you for the next 3.5 days. Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, and parts of Tuesday till when you come back. So until then, you're going to need this roll. So keep the roll, eat as much as you want, but remember, you're not going to have food for the next 3 days if you eat this roll. So everybody was just crazed. They said, oh no, what are we going to do? They kept the roll, they put it in their pockets, they waited until they were absolutely starving, they only ate a tiny little bit so they'd have more left over for when they absolutely needed it, because they weren't sure what was going to happen over the next 3 days. Rav David Leib Schwartz said, this is clearly a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to eat it for my Shabbos meals. Friday night, he took a kezias. Shabbos day, he took a kezias. Shabbos for Shalashudis, he took a kezias. Each meal, he had a kezias for each meal, and he was left with nothing. He had not even a crumb left after Shabbos. They were about to go on the 3-day hike, and the people yelled at him. They said, what are you, a fool? How do you think you're going to survive for the next 3 days? He said, you're right. You're right, I feel foolish. But I felt like it was such a miracle from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I didn't utilize it for the one thing that I'm up on. I felt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't do this for me. That night, the Nazis canceled their trip. Said to the people, forget it. We're not going on the trip anymore. Everybody return your rolls. Anyone who ate their rolls, you can keep it. Don't worry about it. And everybody who didn't eat their rolls yet, return their rolls. Double Lake Schwartz didn't have to return anything. And the next day, they had the same amount of bread as they usually do. That was the story that Alino Shabbat brought. That's a truly remarkable story. But the idea of Emunah, that he must have had, even in the face of the Holocaust, in something that he was makbid on, he said, I just want to do one thing and nothing else. He wasn't makbid on anything else, but he said, this is the one thing that I did. He looks, again, you can look at that story and you can say he's a fool. He was an idiot and he just got lucky at the very end. You can look at it that way, and I can understand the sentiment. That's, again, why I don't like all these stories. But I'm looking at it and I'm saying, that was a tremendous amount of emunah. The amount of emunah that he put into it was an unbelievable amount of emunah. And at the very end, he did survive the war, obviously, with David Leib Schwartz. And he told people what he did, and he made every Shabbos. He never lost a Shabbos without a kezias of bread. And it's just an unbelievable feat, the ability to do that. That's where your emunah, the way the Bris Karov says it, your emunah starts where your cheshbonos end. I don't know how to translate that into English. I have no idea how to say it. The Bris Karov, it was said over Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Brisker was the first one who said it. He told it over to the Griz, and the Griz told it over to someone else, and I forgot how it got through. I believe somehow it was in one of the Reb Ruchem Lavavitz. Somebody said it in a shmooze at the mirror. But the line is, your emuna starts when your cheshbonos end. When you stop thinking about this and that and the other, when all of your savings go down and you've got nothing left, that's where your emuna starts. That's where emuna comes into play. This is the perfect parsha for that. There's nothing better than the emuna that a person has during Shemitah. There's nothing greater than that. Your emuna can't be at a higher level. That's Achrei Nimkar Geula TLO. Says Reb Olson, maybe the only reason why you were sold to Avodah Zarah in the first place, the only reason why you were sold to all these Goyim and everywhere else that happened, is because there's Kedusha there, among that Avodah Zarah, or among those nations of the world, that you're supposed to take in for yourself. You're supposed to grab that Kedusha and bring it in back to Klal Yisrael. And that Nefesh L'Yisrael was sold to the Klipos, not for it to be lost or as an onesh, but for it to gain from that Kedusha and bring it back. And once it has that opportunity to be able to take back that Kedusha and bring it back to Klal Yisrael and do what it knows it's supposed to do, then the Avodah Zarah is ochre on its own. That's Reb Wolfson's line. In the end, we gain and everything else. Everything else, the person ends up growing and everything else goes down. One's whole life can be uplifted by that simple line that after we're sold, there will be a geula. Geula T-E-L-O. You will be sold, but things will start happening. That's always is it going to be that way. Now, one more thing. Parshat Bechukosai. In Bechukosai Telechu, everybody knows the famous Rashi. Tziu Amelim B'Torah. You have to be amol b'Torah. You have to toil and work hard when it comes to your Torah. You can't just expect it to come to you. And the famous example is, you know, sitting back, relaxing with your little coffee in one hand and like a Dunkin' Donuts in the other hand, and et cetera, et cetera. And some people know, you know, exactly what that's referring to. But the fact is that a person like sits back, relaxes, and just like in an easy, but you know, a lazy boy, and starts, you know, and puts a little Gemara on his lap, you know, like that, and makes sure that he knows exactly, whatever, it's just the easy little, you know, whatever it is. Just everything's easy. Everything just comes. The point is the Amelin B'Torah. Says the Chafetz Chaim, and this, it's unbelievable. The Ikar Halicha, in B'chukosai Teilechu, is that Amelus. You know what we say to see him? Anu amelim mekablim schar, v'heim amelim einam mekablim schar. We work and we're getting paid for it, and they work and they don't get paid for it. Think of that line. Whoever heard of a person who's working and is not expecting to get paid for it? What does it happen? You have a tailor. The tailor is working really hard and he does the whole shirt, and at the end he gives it to you. He's like, you know what? Don't pay me. What does it mean? Heim amelim einam mekablim schar. Of course they get schar. They're getting paid something. They're getting something for what they're doing. So what does it mean by Ana Makablam Schar? Shadi says the Chafetz Chaim like this. Let's say a person, a tailor decides, a guy goes up to a tailor and he says, I want a new suit. He gives him the material. Taylor goes and he works his whole body off. He just sits there and he works harder and harder and harder, and he's sweating. Mama's sweat pouring down from his face. And he works on every stitch and he makes sure that it's exactly perfect. Then he goes further and further and further. And at the end of the week, the guy comes back to him and says, so tell me, where's my shirt? Where's my suit? And the tailor says to him, okay, I worked 20 hours a day for the past 6 days on this suit, and I'm almost a third finished. The guy going to get paid? Clearly not. Because you don't get paid for the work, the amount of toil that you put into it. You get paid for the result. The guy who gave you the money to make the suit doesn't care that you worked so hard for it. What he cares about is simply put, do I have a suit or do I not have a suit? I'm expecting a suit. Did I get a suit here or did I not get a suit? And if I don't have a suit, you're not getting paid. It's not so by Torah. By Torah, it makes no difference if you don't get a conclusion. If you work so hard on a sugya, you figure out, and I don't know if you've ever been able to do this, but if you've ever been able to look at a Gemara, figure out something, and scream it out, and honestly feel like you're losing your breath, you're sweating buckets, you're looking at a person, and it's a hot day, and the base manager's air conditioning isn't working well, and you're sitting there, and you're trying to figure out, and you can't, and you've got a headache, and you're sitting there, I'm like, what's going on? What's shot? And you don't get up, and you sit there with your chavrusa, and you work it out with him. Even if you don't come out with the answer, you get schar. You are rewarded not for the conclusion when it comes to Torah. You're rewarded simply put for the work and the effort put into it. That's different. That's what it means by anu amelim u'mekablim schar. No matter what we do, it doesn't matter that you're making a siyum. Doesn't matter that you were able to finish, even if you didn't finish, just by being Amud, just by sitting there and saying, I am taking an hour out of my day to be able to learn an Amud, a line, anything, just one thing, taking some time out, that's what you're getting schar for. By every other avoda in the world, that's not so. You don't get a vote. You don't get anything. The person who works so hard to go to the Olympics and then fall. I've always wondered what the last place finishers feel like in the Olympics. I mean, they're still the 8th best in the world, 10th best in the world. But when I say all the work to be in last in the Olympics, all that work, they've won 4 years of their life. Wasted. For what? When it comes to that, the amelus means nothing. The amelus is not the ikker. It's the ikker is, are you getting the medal? You're not getting the medal. Are you gold, silver, or bronze? Are you getting hired by Nike? I mean, who's sponsoring you for the next couple of years? Are you going to be killed by the Chinese government for not coming in first, second, or third? What's happening to you? It makes no difference that you say, I tried so hard. I worked so hard. I couldn't have worked any harder. They don't look at it that way. They say, like, that's not it. By us, ending off with a Tsarach Ian Gadol is the greatest accomplishment that person can have. Stand off and just say to yourself, I mamish don't know, it's a tzarchi and gadol. It's wow, what a gadol. We have a sefer, kushios atzumos, Rabbi Kiva Eger. Can you imagine the sefer? All it is kashas amshas. That's it, no answers. You can't imagine that anywhere else. It's just kashas. So what's the answers? I don't know, each one of them. Hashem should light up my eyes. I don't know. Tzarchi and Gadol. Can you imagine such a safer? Why would even put it out? To bring sveikos among the Jews? Because that's what Torah is. Torah is about working hard and trying to figure out. But if you don't figure it out, fine. You got to work harder next time. You got to keep going. That's the idea. The last maaser that I'll bring from the Chafetz Chaim, he was working with his son-in-law, Rav Hirsch. Similar verse, they were learning for hours on a certain sugya that they were doing for Orach Chaim for the Mishnah Berurah, and they were trying to figure it out. Both of them screaming at each other. It was 3:00 in the morning when they finished, and the Chafetz Chaim summed up everything that they had with a line and a half in the Mishnah Berurah. Line and a half. The hours of toil, of the amelus that they put into it, ended up being a line and a half in the Mishnah Berurah. So Rav Hirsch turned to the Chafetz Chaim, and he said, "When people read the Mishnah Berurah, are they going to know the amount of amelus that went into that line and a half? What are they going to say when they get to that line and a half? You're like, okay, no, that's the line and a half. It's like, here's pshat. But it took us hours to come up with this pshat. It's not just time to be able to come up with this pshat. What are you supposed to do in that situation?" Said the Chafetz Chaim. He smiled. Said, "In the days of the Russian Tsar, a man and his son were sent out to Siberia. And they were sent out, it wasn't in a bad way. It was to build train tracks for the trains to be able to go straight to Siberia. And they did it willingly for their love for the Tsar. Because they wanted to do whatever the Tsar said. They were willing to do everything that the Tsar said." So what they did, is a big question how to pronounce it. If you look in Hebrew, it's always a Tsar. TZ, yeah, supposed to be. By the way, regardless. So the son turned to his father, and they were working all day long, all day and all night in the freezing cold. And he said to his father, he said, "Dad, when they finish these tracks, and the train conductor comes down this road in the train, are they ever going to remember us? Are they ever going to know that it was me and you that helped lay these tracks? Are they going to know anything?" And the father turned to the son and said two words. I don't know how to translate the second word because it's in Russian. Although those who know Russian told me it's not a Russian word. Not so sure what it is. So I'll just translate in the best way that I can. The Tsar commanded. The Tsar told us to do it. What do you want me to say? The Tsar told us to work. We're working. You don't ask about, oh, where's my reward? The Tsar said, do it. So you do it. Said the Chofetz Chaim. I couldn't care less if they say, like, they look at the line and a half and they say, like, oh, wow, must have put 6 hours of amelus into it. I couldn't care less. That's not the ikker. The ikker is not what people are going to say about me. The ikker is not what people are going to understand when they read that line and a half in the Mishnah Berurah. The ikker is what they're going to, what I have. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me, be amel. I'm being amel. I did what I was supposed to do. That's what I was supposed to do. That's the line that was there for the Amelus and Torah. We'll stop with that. The Indian of Shemitah and Yovel, the Indian of becoming free from going from 7 to 8. That's how we started off. Going down means you're soon going to go up. That there's no way you're going to stay in that matzav. You're going to go up. We said the Avodah Zarah is going to be destroyed. It's going to be uprooted. Because this is the last thing that you could possibly get to. And we said Amelus in the Torah is the ikker. Unlike any other job that you have, it's not about the conclusion. Not about the soap. That's just... makes you feel better. But the ikar is the amelus and the work that you put into it, and that's what it is, the toil that you put into it more than anything else. Shkai, guys, have a good Shabbos. Thank you.
I did, that's it.
You feel it anymore?
I know.